Sheffield Live. Made in Sheffield, made by you.
If you like rock in all its forms, you will love Glory Days. You can listen to us locally on 93.2 FM and on the telly, and anywhere in the world on sheffieldlive.org. What do you think, Dawn? You know what? I think he likes it. That's Glory Days, every Monday 1 till 3 here on Sheffield Live. Bosh, bosh. Oops, I've had an accident.
Hello, I'm Harry Wilburn. I present Steel & Wire every Wednesday, 10 a.m. Americana, Bluegrass, American Roots, and more. Lots more. Lots of guests, lots of local music and musicians. That's Steel & Wire, Wednesday, 10 a.m.
You're listening to fabulous Harry Wilburn on Steel & Wire.
It's time to open the music box. Join me, Steve Roden, every Thursday morning between 10 and 12 for music from the 40s to the 90s from my own music collection. Songs I've grown up with, ones I am sure you will enjoy hearing again. Hope to see you then.
If you love new music and you want to discover the best new artists out there, then tune into The Backroom with me, Paddy. I'll be playing the best of new indie, electro, EDM and punk and showcasing new Sheffield talent. Also music news, local and national gig guide and new album releases. So tune into The Backroom every Thursday night between 6 and 7 p.m. here on Sheffield Live, 93.2 FM.
This is Sheffield Live.
N-E-X-T.
Good morning. Welcome to the Life Science Radio Show here on Sheffield Live 93.2 FM on digital if you're in South Yorkshire or sheffieldlive.org. You can listen online there. You can also download the podcast and listen later at your leisure. The show's all about science in all its different forms. You've got Julian Paul here live in the studio on Paternoster Row in the workstation, if you know where that is in Sheffield. Later on in the show, we'll be talking to Dr. Ogo Osamor. He's our guest speaker for this week, and indeed every second Saturday of the month, we'll be talking about air quality monitoring, why and how we do it. All exciting stuff next week, and indeed every third Saturday of the month, all being well. It's Gareth Morgan, who's a member and also ex-president of the Sheffield Photographic Society. First up today, then, is something I'm going to continue what started last week, how to keep your brain healthy, what you need to know. It was an article by Peter B., who's a lady, I think, spelled P-E-T-A. I think it was in the Saturday Times I got this article. Talks about things you need to do, and last week we talked about eat a balanced diet, exercise daily if even if it's just a walk, and eat more berries, ideally organic ones. So I'm going to talk this week about have a serving of leafy greens daily. So the article said a daily serving of leafy green veg such as spinach, kale, cabbage and lettuce is a must for a healthy brain diet. In a study of 960 older people with memory problems, a team from Rush University in Chicago and the Tufts Human Nutrition Research Center in Boston found that those who ate one serving daily of leafy greens had rates of cognitive decline equivalent to them being 11 years younger than those who ate the least. Leafy green vegetables are a rich source of brain-friendly nutrients, including folate, nitrate and lutein. So spinach, kale, cabbage, lettuce, have some every day. Next, take regular saunas. Researchers from Finland reported in the journal Preventative Medicine report showed that those who visited a sauna at least 2 to 3 times a week had 53% lower risk of being diagnosed with dementia over the following 2 decades than non-sauna users. And they think that might be because saunas help to lower inflammation levels in the body, a known risk factor for cognitive decline. Next up, maybe one you've heard before, is eat more oily fish. Fish is a source of essential omega-3 fatty acids, such as EPA and DHA, key micronutrients that enhance and protect the brain. A study of healthy midlifers published by American researchers in the journal Neurology showed that those who ate a variety of fish and had higher concentrations of omega-3 fats in their bloodstream had better brain structure and cognitive health in their 40s and 50s. Another easy one, drizzle olive oil on your meals. Drizzling olive oil on salads and pasta dishes is a good habit to get into, apparently, because olive oil contains predominantly monounsaturated fatty acids, including the potent oleic acid, which is known to reduce inflammation in the brain. A team of Harvard scientists reporting in the Journal of the American College of Cardiology revealed that a daily teaspoon of olive oil was associated with a 12% reduced risk of death from all causes, interestingly, but highlighted the fact that there was also a connection between olive oil consumption and fewer deaths from degenerative brain disease. That's a very interesting one. So, I mean, olive oil's got a lot of calories in it, but it's saying a teaspoon a day. So it's not a lot. Interesting. Finally, protect your blood brain barrier. The blood-brain barrier, or BBB, is a semi-permeable membrane that acts as a filter to keep harmful substances such as toxins and chemicals away from the brain. The BBB area works well when fully intact, but can easily be weakened by inflammation, smoking, pollution, head injury, or acute or long-term illnesses such as hypertension and diabetes, which can damage blood vessels, including those that make up the blood-brain barrier. Not a term I've heard before, if I'm honest. If the blood-brain barrier becomes defective, it can speed up the accumulation of amyloid beta and tau proteins, accelerating cognitive decline. However, there are many things we can do to preserve it. Simple steps such as avoiding chemicals and additives as much as you can in cosmetic cleaning products, and importantly, what you eat, and of course, reducing stress in your life are also key steps to take, and exercising. So they're all key things. How to keep your brain healthy. In summary, eat a balanced diet, exercise daily, even if it's just a walk. Eat more berries, ideally organic ones. Have a serving of leafy greens daily. Take regular saunas. Eat more oily fish. Drizzle olive oil on your meals. Don't have too much. A teaspoon's enough a day. And protect your blood-brain barrier. Amazing. Something's Going On In My Head by Status Quo. Great track. So we talk about how to keep your brain healthy, the simple things you can do. Of course, you're listening to the Life Science Radio Show here on Sheffield Live 93.2 FM. Next up, an environment news. In brief, a fundraising campaign has been launched to pay for a litter-eating drone, which has been helping to clean up the waterways in Leeds. Waste Shark has helped remove the equivalent of more than 3,000 plastic bottles from the water around Leeds Dock, as well as shoes, umbrellas, footballs and a fridge. Leeds Waterfront Group, which introduced the drone in June 2024, is now hoping to raise £24,000 to maintain its weekly clean-up operation. And finally, Sir David Attenborough believes his new cinema-length film Ocean could play a decisive role in saving biodiversity and protecting the planet from climate change. Sir David, who was 99 years old on Thursday, can you believe, said, after almost 100 years on the planet, I now understand the most important place on Earth is not on land, but at sea. The ocean is a planet's support system and humanity's greatest ally against climate catastrophe. The film shows how the world's oceans are at a tipping point, but also that all is not lost. Well, not yet. Sir David Attenborough believes that the ocean can bounce back to life if left alone and possibly thrive beyond anything anyone alive has ever seen. Now, David is saying trawling the bottom of the ocean, as many fishing vessels do, is absolutely devastating to the ocean. So it'll be very interesting to see what happens as a result of that film. And who knows, the film show is who follows us at 12 o'clock today, maybe reviewing that film at some point, who knows?
Ready, but now we're steady and then they went. One, two.
Live version of The Ocean there by Led Zeppelin, cracking stuff, eh? Because Sir David Attenborough has a new film out called The Ocean, most interesting. Of course, listen to the Life Science Radio Show here on Sheffield Live 93.2 FM. We should have our PG on the line. Good morning, PG. Oh, I'll tell you what. I've not plugged you in again. I'm getting good at this.
Hang on. Paul.
There you are. Are you there?
I think I am.
Oh, it's me. Operator error. And there was me telling you everything's been going swimmingly this morning. As right, only live radio can go
sinking.
Swimmingly.
Because there's a nice bit of sunshine again, isn't
there? There is. So, yeah, everything's working fine now. We can hear you loud and clear. So what's caught your eye this week in the science news then?
Oh, well, unusually, I've touched on this before, but I went and did a bit of shopping, so I got the free paper that you get from Waitrose.
Oh, get you shopping at Waitrose, eh?
Yeah, very good. Well, I had a look there for this little good news in brief, which is interesting, picks up bits and pieces. And one of those is news that the space satellite mission to analyse and the world's forests and jungles is still carrying on, but it's got a strong link to developments that were aided by Sheffield University, I think. So it's been about 10 years in developing this space probe, and it's going to create a 3D map of the world's densest and most remote tropical forests. So it'll be interesting, but according to that, then we can actually make a much better estimate of the capacity for storing CO2. So that's underway. That's a nice little piece that they put in. But also, a little reminder in there to say that it's World Migratory Bird Day today. And saying if you take a look up in the skies, I think the guidance for UK is really leaning towards June time, where they're expecting the arrival of the swifts. And I think we've not really seen many swifts. I saw swallows last year.
They are back. They're back where we live. They've only just come back.
Yeah, but the swift is a smaller brown without the sort of light underbelly version. So you're sort of looking up at the sky, but it sort of reminded me. So I sort of had a look, and they're talking about migratory species. So it didn't count that I've seen magpies today. I've seen pigeons, wood pigeons, seen a blackbird. But annoyingly, I keep hearing some little tiny birds. And because my big tree is starting to come into leaf, it's really, really difficult to spot them. So they've got a piping little call, and there are a lot of things like sedge warblers and different sort of tit-type birds, blue tits, grey tits, starting to come around. I've seen a few sparrows, which is an improvement, I think, over last year. But sadly, I've not seen anything of starlings.
No. We had a few, and we've not had them around where we live for absolutely years. 30 years ago, there were so many of them, and they just disappeared.
Well, if you remember when they first opened up the moor to pedestrianisation, there were trees down the moor. And you used to get
a
local murmuration of
you
starlings.
You did.
So it's sad that that's not with us anymore. And there is quite a heavy decline in a lot of bird populations. So it's worth looking up at the sky and remembering that it's World Migratory Birds Day.
Wow. I did pick up something, I think it was the other day in the paper, about blackbirds at risk from a virus, I think. I think it's called something like Osutsu or something.
Yeah,
I'll have to Google that and remind myself that people have been told to keep an eye out for birds that look ill.
Sad. We regularly had a blackbird. It used to sit in our tree and sing its song, and I'd try and sing
shut
back
it up,
to it.
Or shut it up, particularly if it starts just before, you know, just at dawn.
Yeah, but unfortunately we've not seen the male blackbird. Earlier on we saw the female blackbird, but usually we got fledglings and things, and we're not seeing that this year, so a bit worried that something's gone astray.
I did see in the RHS magazine, it's called a soot. We'll just try and get that up. It's a virus. Osutu, U-S-U-T-U. Yeah, so everybody's saying, keep an eye out for poorly blackbirds. I think there's a website you can go on and report your findings as well, if you see anything, because they want to know how much it's spreading. So, make the most of those blackbirds.
Yeah, well, I think it's make the most of wildlife. And another little bit of a report in the paper that I picked up is to talk about Chalcombe Toad Rescue, who 22 years have been preparing in February and March for the arrival of frogs and toads. And they listed this year that they've already, they closed a section of road down to allow them to migrate into some open water that they've got. So they're just five short of 4,000 in the count.
Wow.
Of toads going across. And also this year they've spotted a crested newt.
Oh.
That kind of brought back the memories of a young person going walking down the sort of Moss Valley, and there were different streams and ponds, and I remember seeing crested newts back then. On the underside, they used to be quite bright yellow, so they looked like a miniature dinosaur.
Crested
back. but we obviously used to see tadpoles and frogs and the development of things when we went out on our walks.
I think that's in decline because we used to have frogs as well, but not seen any for years.
Yeah, and again for us, because there's not apparently open water where we are, but there is a water course that's, I think, buried now towards the bottom of the garden. So we used to have quite a few froglets around, especially when it had rained. Our older cat used to think it was great fun to pick them up by the leg and
run
around with them. So that was quite a comedy turn. I was chasing the cat. I was trying to stop it from playing with the frogs. But, yeah, so I think it's the kind of stuff that we just got to watch out for. Anyway, we've started to receive warnings that Yorkshire Water are telling us that we're potentially heading towards a drought. It's been one of the driest springs for quite a few years, and they're talking about a lot of the reservoirs being 30 to 40% down on where they should be at this time of year. So if we don't get some rain, then we might find that we're back into drought conditions, which is seems weird after all the rain that's been down sort of around.
Well, we were talking about this the other day because we're saying that our climate now seems to be, it's very dry, and then we get a lot of rain all at once. So it's almost the extremes of each dryness and then so much water, the ground can't take it when it does rain.
It's weird. So kind of put me on the thought of what's happening with water. And I think I mentioned a while ago that the Earth's axis tilted slightly because of the amount of groundwater that's being withdrawn to feed fresh water to people around the world. They're taking out that much of the groundwater.
Which is quite worrying, isn't it, really?
Absolutely. But on another side of a coin, there's a thing in China on the Yangtze River called the Three Gorges Dam Project. And it's, I think, probably the biggest dam in the world. It dams three gorges that feed into the Yangtze River. And it's probably one of the biggest green energy power generators from water in the world. But NASA has looked into the impacts and found that, in actual fact, it is noticeably slowing the rotation of the Earth down.
Oh, blimey.
So when I think you talk about Richard Attenborough...
Do you know, well, it's mind-boggling, Paul.
Yeah, sorry, David Attenborough. When you talk about him and the oceans, there is a lot of concern about the oceans and what they've done. And, I mean, we talked about the possibility of deep trawling for metal nodules that are on the ocean floor in deep ocean. And a lot of companies are showing interest to exploit that sort of resource. But again, it's one of those things that's had little research about the actual impact of obtaining these nodules and what might happen if they're not where they were. So, again, exploitation is one of the things which a lot of industry, the primary industry, is about exploiting things that come wood, coal, oil, gas, all of those things. But some of the stuff is not apparent what's going to happen. So it's kind of interesting that something that starts off with one intention. I mean, we've just seen that it could virtually be close to one of the causes of the conflict between Pakistan and India, because they actually had an agreement over dividing the water from, I think, three major rivers between the two countries. And early on in this current spat, India threatened to pull out of the agreement about fairly sharing the water resources. So water is actually becoming a real sort of major conflict point around the world. And now we've seen the problems of drought in Sudan and in Somalia. So on that coast, we're finding that water is a precious commodity, and people are prepared to go to some lengths to get their hands on it. So, water. So, yeah, bit of water on the brain for me now.
Well, it's interesting, because I think there's a rule somewhere that says, it's a rule of threes, I think, we can survive, is it 3 minutes without breathing or air, oxygen, 3 days without water, so that's not a lot.
No. Nope.
And depending on your conditions as well, I guess, could be less. 3 weeks without food, I think, is it?
Yeah.
It's something like that.
Yeah, I think, yeah, it's there, and it's the basic requirements. And I think that we can have a lot of the high-end things that we seem to aspire to these days, but you can't lose sight of that. And I think the big power outages in Spain and Portugal brought home the point again. And I think the UK is trying to revamp our resilience advice. So they've gone back to the late 50s, where we were worried about atomic threats. And really, I mean, I think I spoke the other week about the going to remake the film Threads, which was based in and around Sheffield. And I think one of the issues there is when society sort of breaks down and people aren't preparing fresh water supplies, quite quickly it starts to unwind society.
Well, it certainly does, yeah.
So, yeah, it's a very sort of difficult thing to sort of come to terms with, and it's about time we revamped a lot of these issues because it is important. And we've seen sort of in various places when there's a problem of supply for food, you know, it starts a panic.
Like COVID.
Yeah, well, in lockdown, you know, people were off clearing the shelves of toilet paper.
It's not unlike that same story in Marks and Spencer's since it's been hacked.
Yes.
In the food bit, the shelves are bare, and you can imagine stock comes in, limited stock, and everybody, if they can afford to, will stockpile what there is there.
Yeah.
And, yeah, we're a strange breed as humans, aren't we?
Well, I think, and the other thing that happens is, you know, these cyber attacks are looking at things like our infrastructure, and it sort of brought me, luckily, to something that I complained about. We don't often get news about Sheffield Hallam University, but I saw a thing from them saying that this is the third year that they've hosted a thing called Siege Capture the Flag. It's a competition bringing together cybersecurity student teams from universities across the United Kingdom. And the team that came up top of the The winners was Lancaster University. Second place was Manchester. And in third place was Sheffield Hallam University.
Oh, I say.
So it's challenges participants with a variety of cybersecurity tasks, including reverse engineering, open source intelligence, cryptography, web security, artificial intelligence challenges. So some interesting work, and it's nice to get some news out of Sheffield Hallam.
It is. Not so good on the cyber attack front, though, is it?
Well, I think it's good to see that we are training people, and like I said to several times, I think over the time that we've been doing the science show, you don't really know what happens with your data, and there are a tremendous number of firms who are what they call data mining, and they look at data. So when you talk about reverse engineering, one is to look at other people's programming and be able to take it apart and see how that's been done and exploit any weaknesses. So that's part of the thing for hackers. Open source intelligence, Facebook and all the things that people share, family events and the rest of it, can be a tremendous source of information for lots of people.
Yeah.
So there's that one. Cryptography is, I don't know if you saw the thing about police forces managed to get into one of the encrypted telephone systems that underworld were using quite extensively, and because of that they actually made some inroads into organized crime.
The underworld, my word.
Or the dark world, whatever you say. But web security, if you can, one of the things that they do in the attacks, like the retail attacks, is a denial of service. So, which is where they falsely flood millions and millions of messages onto the platform that they use, and it stops anybody being able to access that. If they can do that and secure it in a way that they can then demand money for releasing the site again. And then looking at artificial intelligence and what that may be doing. We've had another little round of things about whether the UK government should override copyright to allow the development of AI by basically pillaging people's copyrights. So as musicians, you're probably aware that... I think Paul McCartney has said, basically you're going to cut off the one of the things that feeds our society, the musical fraternity, if you don't support their copyright. It's going to take away any sort of attraction for people to...
It's not just music, though, Paul, is it? It's anybody who's artistic or creative.
That's right. And, we're seeing that.
Oh, clever.
How do we adapt to that world too?
It is. One final thing I'll say before I let you go is I read in also the RHS magazine, Royal Horticultural Society magazine, about the importance of soil, not as just as capturing carbon, but also for water storage and control. Yes. Absolutely. And I thought that was very interesting to think about. Just don't think about soil as just soil. It does a lot more things.
Well, I think a lot of people should take a tilt at growing something for themselves, because then you start to learn about the problems of pests and blights and other things that can affect your food production.
Drought, flood.
I think it's... we've kind of got too far away from that towards being the people who browse the shelves of plastic packaged
food. Not if your supermarket's been hacked. So it's a funny old world. All great stuff, Paul.
Thank you, Paul.
To you Monday, Glory Days Rock Show, 1 till 3.
I look forward to it.
Thank you, Paul. Bye-bye.
Cheers. Bye.
What's really news after all? The king broke a string. Did the warrant five captain calls? Excuse me, your news has dead.
Newsworth there by Green Slade. RPG was talking about lots of newsworthy things, including water, importantly. You're of course listening to the Live Science Radio Show here on Sheffield Live 93.2 FM on digital if you're in South Yorkshire or sheffieldlive.org. We should have Dr. Ogo Osamo on the line. Good morning, Ogo, sir.
Good morning, Julie. How are you?
Very well indeed, Ogo. Thank you for joining us on this rather sunny Saturday.
It's my pleasure.
I know you're a busy man. I know you're a busy man. You're always out and about, you see. So we're very honoured to have you on the line.
Thank you, Julie.
Yeah, and for people who don't know, Ogo, we used to work together. It's quite seems quite a long time ago now, but we both worked for Sheffield City Council and we both worked in air quality.
That's correct.
And it's a fascinating subject, as anyone will tell you who's ever been involved in it. So today I thought we would talk about why we monitor air quality and how we monitor air quality.
Great stuff. Yeah, those two topics are really
interesting, aren't they?
Interesting, yeah. So, we monitor air quality or air pollution, really, levels in the air. It's because of the health effects that air pollution has on us. Now, when we talk about air quality, basically the term itself describes how polluted the air we breathe is. And when air quality is poor, a number of people, especially those who probably have lung and heart conditions, may in fact struggle to go outside and enjoy, given a day such as beautiful as today,
yes,
enjoy that. So we monitor air quality. And when we talk about quality, you immediately think of quantity, because that speaks to the quantity or the amount of air pollutants in air.
Mm.
Right, so...
And you can't see these pollutants.
That is the challenge.
It is.
In the past, if you go back to the 1950s, coming up to the 60s and so on, you could clearly and visibly see pollutants in the air, you know, because of the dark smoke, the sulfur dioxide and stuff in the air and so forth. Those were visible.
Particularly in Sheffield, yeah.
Particularly in Sheffield with the iron and steel industry, the active iron and steel industry. Now, with government policies helping to implement measures that cleaned up pollutants from their sources, the nature of pollution then, which was purely black soot and smoke and stuff in the air, changed. But because we no longer see, or, you know, those that type of air pollution did not mean
it isn't there.
Air pollution had disappeared. Because the nature of air pollutants in air changed as well.
It has. Now, Sheffield is important even way back, isn't it? Because I think they were the first to implement the, is it the smoke-free zone?
Yes, and the Clean Air Act.
The Clean Air Act, sorry, that's the one.
Yeah, the Clean Air Act. Sheffield was the first to implement it. Now, along that was the use of, instead of coal for producing energy and, you know, processing iron and steel and so forth, gas became part of our energy source. For example, gas central heating. If you remember in the past, coal was used to heat and boil, you know, water in the homes. But when gas came along, it displaced coal. And displaced that all the air pollutants that were associated with burning coal.
Yes.
Now, the interesting thing is that gas is far more exothermic. In other words, it produces far more heat for its small quantity compared to coal.
Ah, right.
That type of heat, unfortunately, also meant that nitrogen in the air gets burned. Apart from, you know, I'll go back one step so that you understand what I'm saying. The air we breathe is made up of about 79% of nitrogen and about 20.9% of oxygen. Then there's carbon dioxide and other pollutants in the air. Now, when the temperature that gas burns at, well, reverse, when you burn gas, for example, you draw in air. Because you draw in air, you also draw in nitrogen dioxide because it's out of air.
Yes.
Now, that gets in internal combustion systems, that also burns, that nitrogen dioxide that's burned generates nitrogen oxides.
Which are the ones?
Nitric oxide and nitrogen dioxide. Now, nitric oxide is more the greater component. So when it gets into air, there are oxidants in the air. Sorry, this is a bit complicated, but
that's the way science is. Yeah.
which then converts the nitric oxide NO into nitrogen dioxide. And the biggest culprit for that is ozone.
Ah.
Ozone is a pollutant in air that oxidizes nitric oxide and produces nitrogen dioxide.
Ah, because ozone's got three molecules of oxygen. I remember this. It's O3, isn't it? So it's got one that can react. Correct. You see, it's all coming back to me, Ogo.
Correct. Now, it's that nitrogen dioxide that's produced that has health effects on us.
Yeah, well, the interesting thing you said at the beginning was about the Clean Air Act was tackling at source, pollutions at source. And all my time I've worked with you, you always said the best way to tackle air pollution is at source. And that has stuck with me as a mantra.
It's not
about offsetting, is it?
No.
It's about get to the nitty-gritty. But some things are easier to mitigate, aren't they? Or to tackle at source than others.
That's correct. So because air pollution affects our health, that's why we monitor it. That's why we measure it. The key pollutants that are important to us in Sheffield really are nitrogen dioxide and fine particulate matter.
Yes.
These two pollutants are still with us, and they still affect people's health.
But they're everywhere as well. It's not just Sheffield, not just is Sheffield. It? Some cities have got worse problems than we have.
That's correct. And it's not every part of Sheffield.
No.
That has these challenges. Having said so, their key sources are from transport, i.e. the cars we drive. They're from industry, in terms of the things that industry does in terms of burning energy and so on. And those two sources are quite important sources of air pollution, but domestically as well. When we cook, when we heat our houses, we still generate small amounts of these air pollutants. Yes, so those are the sources from which they come. Now, several measures, because the government has realized when, having been taken to court by Client Earth.
Yes.
Social impact. What are they called? Yeah, they're social.
Is there like a social enterprise, aren't they? Like social, they're lawyers, aren't they? Like they lobby for climate and environment policies, don't they?
That's correct. And they took the government to court and forced a situation where the government is now having to implement the measures that are necessary to improve the air we breathe, the quality of air that we breathe. As a consequence, going down the road, Sheffield now has a clean air zone, a Class C clean air zone, which is a zone that, unless your vehicle, especially the commercial vehicles, taxis, buses, the heavy goods vehicles, and so on, if they don't meet the required standards, they have to pay a fee to come into the city of Sheffield. As a strategy, that means that heavy polluting vehicles don't come into the city centre. Now, some might say, what about the other parts of the city? If you address, in other words, you buy vehicles or improve your vehicles to meet the standards,
in the centre, it's a knock-on.
The benefits of doing that has a knock-on on other parts of the city. So if you take taxis, for example, they travel everywhere in the city.
And they travel very frequently, don't they, within that area?
That's right. Buses as well. Most buses come through the city centre. So if their engines, emissions from the engines are reduced because they've improved, either bought a new bus or new engines, or have applied tailpipe cleaning
devices, technology. Yeah.
Then every part of the city also benefits. And as we know, I mean, as is the case now, actually, if you go onto the real-time monitoring stations...
Or you look at the council's website, yeah, for air quality monitoring, they have reported definite improvements in reductions in nitrogen dioxide gas, which is one of the key things, isn't it, that comes from vehicles.
That's right. Also, on the national level, if you go to if you go to UK Air, go to UK Air website, you can actually
compare us and other places.
UK, yeah, and lots of other places, but I just cite that one.
Yeah.
And you can search by postcode to see the predicted or suggested level of pollution is in your area. So air quality really is an important item to think about because of its effect on our health.
Even though we don't often see it. So, do you want to talk a little bit about how Sheffield and indeed, well, other places, but Sheffield was quite ahead of the game in its community air quality monitoring programme, wasn't it?
That is correct. I mean, Sheffield population is probably the most informed when it comes to air pollution, knowledge about air pollution.
Yeah, yeah.
Many years back, given the level of pollution that was being measured in the Tinsley area.
Yeah, around the motorway, yes.
Around the motorway. One of our old colleagues, well, pals, like people we worked with, Neil Parry and the Tinsley Group.
Yes, Action Group.
Campaigned heavily, and we started community air pollution monitoring
and
using diffusion.
Yeah, and we've got a tremendous amount still, haven't we? And they're a very valuable source, not only of monitoring air pollution, but of engaging the community to be aware of air quality in their area. So it was amazing achievement. And one of your achievements, I would say, when you were at work, Ogo.
That's right. And there was also the recognition that it was a very clever way of communicating challenging, you know, scientific knowledge or, you know, information to the community, because they were hands-on receiving diffusion tubes, putting it out there, you know, by themselves and receiving the results when they come. They then, because of their participation, began to understand where these pollutants were coming from.
Even though you can't see them, can you?
We can see them, yes. How they were monitored, and were able to explain it. Interestingly, give them sufficient knowledge to be able to challenge big businesses that want to
build or generate traffic in their area.
In their area, yeah.
And make things worse.
Because of the things they were doing.
You know,
so that was very interesting. We may recall the situation in the Cardinal area of Sheffield, where some planning applications were resisted.
On the grounds of,
the grounds of air quality.
Yeah. Increased traffic there.
Activities of the community. They used the information they had in hand and made their representation to the planning board.
Yeah.
And the extension that was being proposed by a business in that area was resisted.
So that monitoring is still going on. And diffusion tubes, if you can try and explain them to anybody listening, they're like little test tubes, aren't they? And they generally get put up on like lampposts or something, and they stay there for like a month, and then they go off to a lab. So it's all independent and verified, and the results come back. So it's amazing, isn't it? And you can go on the council's website. There used to be a map where you could see where they all were and what the figures were.
That's correct. If you go to Air Quality in Sheffield web page.
Yeah.
And on the right-hand side, you'll see supporting information. The page gives you information about air quality anyway. But on the right-hand side of it, you'll see supporting information. And then beneath it is real-time. There's a link.
It's a real-time. Wow.
Air quality monitoring. It takes you to a page where you can, the middle tab, leads you to a map where automatic monitoring stations are located. It's indicated, there. And you can click on any of the stations
and have a look.
The links to the stations. And you'll be able to interrogate the levels of air pollution, in the, being monitored at that location.
And also where you live. We're fast running out of time. I'll go. So sadly, I'm going to have to let you go. But next time, I hope you're going to carry on your little talk and maybe talk about one step further from monitoring and look at actually forecasting air pollution into the future, which is air quality modelling. And also, just finally on monitoring, we do have automatic monitoring stations as well to sort of help you look at a whole year and try and calibrate all the manual readings as well.
That is correct.
Yeah, it's a fascinating subject.
There are at least six.
There are.
That Sheffield Local Authority owns and operates. And then there's additional three that national government.
Yeah, because clearly national government's got an interest as well. Absolutely fantastic stuff, Ogo. Thank you so much. Yeah. Sorry we've run out of time.
Thank you, Ogo.
Look forward to speaking to you next time.
Bye-bye.
You're welcome.
Bye-bye, Ogo. Bye.
Bye. Bye-bye. 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 Bye-bye.